the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Holy smokes, we're not even a week into the CHL playoffs, and already it has been jaw-dropping. Welcome once again to Junior, I'm Jeff Merrick, joined as always by Sam Cosentino. Coming off last night's Brandon win over the Edmonton Oil Kings, they look to close out later on this evening on Sportsnet, 10 o'clock Eastern, 8 Mountain, Game 5 in that series. Kelly McCrimmon, owner, general manager, coach of the Wheat Kings, will join us a little bit later on. But Sam, just as a wide brush comment, and you've been through CHL playoffs for a number of years now, this, in my opinion, has been one of the most wildly exciting periods of playoff hockey that I've seen in the CHL. What say you?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me, Jeff, and here's why. You look in the Western Hockey League, and it's a new format, so you get some of those divisional rivalries, and the games have been really, really good. I mean, I look at the Regina Swifty series, I look at the Kootenay Calgary series, just dynamite, you know, because overtime games in there, one goal games, really close. I look at the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and it was really tough for me to determine who would be the key team going in. And you know, yes, the Ramparts are the host of the MasterCard Memorial Cup, but you looked at Rimouski, and you looked at a couple of sleepers, and maybe Val-d'Or, Cape Breton as a lower seed, Gatineau Olympique. That's been really wild. And then you look at the Ontario Hockey League, and you think Erie's going to breeze through, and they've had all kinds of difficulty with Sarnia early on. Sault Ste. Marie has played to capabilities. Peterborough comes back and wins Game 3 against Oshawa at home. Lots of wild stuff going on. What's really stuck out to me, a lot of games where there's been eight or more goals scored by one team, and plenty of hat tricks early on. I'm not sure what's going on there. So it's been thrilling right through the CHL. It's been a lot of fun. It's going to get even better though, Jeff, once we pare down into the second round, I believe.
Oh, absolutely, as teams get crunched out. Let's start with the Western League and sharpen the pencil a little bit further on some of these series that you just alluded to and some of the other big ones with some huge performances from not just key teams but key players as well. Starting with the Western Hockey League, we'll start with the Western Conference. Kelowna up as we do this podcast, 3-0 over Tri-City. Victoria up 2-0 on PG. Silvertips and Spokane are all tied up at ones. And maybe let's start here. The Seattle Thunderbirds up 2-1 in their best of seven against the Portland Winterhawks. Your thoughts on that one? We thought all along that once Seattle got healthy and we started to see Matthew Barzal and Shea Theodore in the lineup at the exact same time, Seattle would be a much better team. And so far, three games in, they look to be, Sam. They look to be.
Funny to me because no Keegan Kolzar in the series for Seattle, which is just fascinating because he's a draft eligible player. He's a heavy guy. He's really built for this series against the Portland Winterhawks because they're a big team as well. And you look at guys like Gropp, as you talked about, you know, their 97 core is really good. Getting Alexander True back and healthy, Shea Theodore, we knew all about him. Corey Miette has been a great addition as an overager. Ethan Bear, draft eligible guy, Lipsbergs, who comes back midway through the year from the East Coast League. But the guy you really have to focus on, I think, is Taron Kozin in goal. And, you know, I've seen Seattle play live a couple of times this year. Kozin has been really, really good. Overage goaltender, you know, in his final year here, and he's given Portland everything it can handle. And on the flip side of that, when you look at Portland, Jeff, you know, Aiden Hill has had a huge rise to prominence. I know Damian has really kind of tooted his horn as being a top draft eligible guy. For me, he hasn't played enough games, and I think that inexperience is starting to show now a little in the playoffs. They've moved Brendan Burke out to Calgary. He's had a pretty good run. It falls on your shoulders. It's okay in the regular season, but when it falls on your shoulders in the playoffs and you're playing against a big, heavy team like Seattle, things start to go sideways a little bit, and I think some of that inexperience, especially in goal, is starting to show.
Speaking of in goal, you know, one of the teams we should focus on here as we look at the Western Conference are the Kelowna Rockets. And down the stretch, we didn't see Kelowna play their best hockey. That's not exactly a secret. And the word about Kelowna all season long is, you know, they're dynamic up front. Their top six can fill the net. Their back end is amongst elite, not just the Western League, but the entire CHL as well. But can Jackson Whistle get the job done? Jackson Whistle finally surrendered some goals last night to Tri-City, but he's been wonderful. Goaltender of the week. Your thoughts on what Kelowna is doing? Is this the real Kelowna Rockets team that we thought we were going to see come playoff time?
I think it is, Jeff, and I think it's been a huge series so far for Kelowna. And yes, you look at, you know, essentially a 1 versus an 8 seed because Tri-City comes in as that second wild card team. But the one thing Tri-City had that maybe no other team had in the Canadian Hockey League, save for maybe a couple, and that's gone sideways. We'll get to the OHL in a little while on Jake Patterson, but the goaltender and Eric Comrie. And Comrie has played well, but I don't think he's quite played up to the guy that we saw be the backup at the World Juniors and the guy who was you know, so highly touted by the Winnipeg Jets. So going into the series, it was really important for me to see Kelowna get out to a lead, and here's why, Jeff. I thought with the moves Bruce Hamilton made and getting a sense and seeing Kelowna here in the last couple of weeks of the season, they felt the pressure. The coaching staff felt the pressure that was intense. They were nervous, not quite as welcoming as they normally are. And you could see it in their faces that they felt the pressure. And I think Bruce Hamilton, because he went out and made those moves, is an active owner, active general manager. He's in and around the room. He knows what's going on. He's got his finger on the pulse. And I think he's kind of overseeing things, has put some pressure on his hockey club. So to see the way Jackson Whistle responded, to see the way the coaching staff has responded to get this to the standard that it's been held to most of the year, was really important for me in this first round. Things have gone according to plan, at least to this point, with a 3-0 edge.
And now this without Josh Morrissey, one of their top defensemen who came over in the trade with PA this year. Last night, the overtime heroics were provided by Austin Wagner in overtime against the Swift Current Broncos. Regina has Swifty down 3-0, looking to close out tonight. And all of this, we should remind you as well, this is being done without Sam Steele, who's out with the injury.
I am just amazed by the job that John Paddock has done here. I mean, you take an older guy who comes back to the junior ranks and has stepped in there, has been very impactful in terms of what Chad Lang, the general manager, has had to do in make trades. They've gotten younger. They've traded good players away. You know, you look at Burroughs and you look at Morgan Klimchuk, and yet they have still found a way to get things done here. And they're on a collision course right now with the Brandon Wheat Kings, which for Brandon is going to be a nice, you know, travel setup there, the closest team that they're located to. So, but getting back to Regina, you know, again, getting some good goaltending from Wapple. They've got some guys in there who can still get it done. Austin Wagner's really starting to make a name for himself. Braden Christopher's an overage guy who's played well. Been a guy who's come in and done some nice things as a player, was keyed in one of those deals. Guys that were left over from the trade, I think what it did is a couple of things, Jeff. I think, first of all, it really tightened the group in terms of making the entire group younger. And when guys are closer to the same age, they tend to pull for each other more. And you got rid of some of that stuff with the old Regina franchise and, you know, a team that had been maligned from its ownership right through to you know, not having success in the playoffs. And that's no disrespect to the players who were moved in trades, Morgan Klimchuk being one of them. I have the utmost respect for him. But I think it's just getting rid of some of that old guard and bringing in the new guard and really turning this team over from the ownership group to the coaching staff and John Paddock to younger players in a community that has just been dying for some playoff success. They're starting to get it now against a very tough Swift Current team. You know, and it's going to get a little more difficult for Swift Current. Jake DeBrusk does not look like he's going to play in the next game here for Swifty, so that's going to be a real challenge moving forward. But you have to be, as a Regina Pats fan, you've got to be really happy that they traded away some really good and talented players, yet still may very well get into round two.
Yeah, indeed. And two thumbs up to the work that John Paddock, as you pointed out, is doing with the Regina Pats. The Calgary Kootenay series has been wild, and the Calgary Kootenay series is shining a spotlight on Adam Tambellini, the OT hero in Game 2 and the OT hero in Game 3 last night, and an 8-7 romp that Tambellini scored not only the overtime winner, but that overtime winner was the third of his hat trick on the night. The Ranger prospect is firing on all cylinders. This one, Sam, is just flat out of the 80s with the high scores and the lead changes and the crazy play. If you're into wild, wide-open hockey, Wild West style, Calgary and Kootenay is for you right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, you know, with Wyatt Hoffman and goal and the way that, Brendan Burke played since coming over from Portland, you thought that this was going to be a tighter series. I mean, Ryan McGill's been down the road a couple of times before. You know, they got really defensively responsible players, but it has been anything but that. 3 one-goal games, two of them decided in overtime, and the top guys have really been the top guys for both teams. You mentioned Tambellini. How about Travis Sanheim? Originally Great. Credited with that overtime goal, ended up getting an assist on it for a 5-point night. Tambellini with the hat trick. Tim Bozon, 6 points. Unbelievable. Sam Reinhart, 3 points. Valiev ties it up with 4 seconds left for Kootenay. So it's really allowed the kind of the big guys to go about their business in an offensive fashion, and that series has surprised me a little bit, especially with last night's game. It's been a little more high scoring than I expected. I thought Kootenay was going to try and dumb it down and muck it up a little bit and get Calgary into the position where they'd be uncomfortable playing a slower paced game, but that really hasn't been the way it's gone in that series. I mean, it's been fun to watch that one from afar. I'm sure you feel the same way, Jeff.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And to think that it wasn't that long ago that we were thinking about Tim Bozon and saying to ourselves, we wonder if he'll ever play another game of hockey again. And not only is he playing, but he's playing at a high level as well. Let's touch on the game that we had last night. The Brandon Wheat Kings defeat the Edmonton Oil Kings 3-2. It's a close game. We're going to talk to Kelly McCrimmon here in a couple of seconds, so we'll drill down a little bit more with Kelly when he joins the podcast. But your thoughts on what Brandon is doing to the Edmonton Oil Kings here. I think, and you look at the second game where they put in 8-goal stamp on the Oil Kings, the thought was that Brandon was going to, you know, walk in and march over a team that had lost a lot of elements off that MasterCard Memorial Cup winning squad last year, whether it's Reinhardt, whether it's Mraz, whether it's Curtis Lazar, whether it's Samuelson. They've lost some big-name players. But I got to be honest with you, Sam, I'm impressed at how Edmonton has played the Wheat Kings. Outside of Game 2, of course. Outside of Game 2, they've played them really close and really tight.
Speaks to the coaching staff of Steve Hamilton and Ryan Marsh. They've done a fabulous job bringing these young players along, Davis Kosh and Andrew Kepa being two of them, in particular, Ben Carroll on the back end. But, you know, when you have Tristan Jarry in goal, you're really allowed to play your game. And the thing that's plagued Edmonton is really the thing that's plagued them throughout the course of about three quarters of the regular season: power play and goal scoring. And those two are closely tied together, so I consider them to be one key element. And those two things have failed Edmonton in this series so far. If they don't get better, that series is going to end tonight. But you're right, Jeff. I've been really impressed. In 2-3-2 games where the Oil Kings had chances in both of those games, 3 and 4, to tie things up late, disallowed goal in game number 3, and you know, Dyson Mayo with a golden opportunity to tie it at the end of game 4. So for me, this is an Oil Kings team that, you know, may have obviously taken a dip from being the MasterCard Memorial Cup champs from last year, but they're not going away anytime soon either. And I look at some of the young players and how this coaching staff is developing them. I think it was a coup to get into the playoffs this year, and I think bigger and better things are expected from this club as the Oil Kings move forward.
Medicine Hat Tigers, we should point out as well, up 2-0 over the Red Deer Rebels, that closing out the Eastern Conference. So that is a snapshot of what's happening in the Western Hockey League. From West, Sam, let's start to head east, and we find our way into the Ontario Hockey League, where we find the Greyhounds up 3-0 over Saginaw. Erie, we'll get to them, up 3-1 over the Sarnia Spirit. London with a commanding 3-0 lead over the Kitchener Rangers after a shellacking last night. The Storm up 2-1 over Owen Sound. Oshawa and Peterborough. This one's interesting. Peterborough jumps back into it yesterday with a big 3-1 win. Jenny's still up 2-1 in that series. 2-0 Barrie over Belleville. The Battalion with a commanding 3-0 series lead over Paul McFarland's Kingston Frontenacs, and the 67s in a wild series of 2-1 against the Niagara Ice Dogs. Let's start with the Sioux Greyhounds, who look to be cucumber cool through the first three games. And if you looked at game 2, I mean, how many goals did you count, Sam, where it was 5 touches and then a tap in an empty net? The Sioux right now, for my money, firing on all cylinders and the best team that I've seen in the playoffs so far.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Jeff. I think it's the best team I've seen in the regular season. And take DJ Smith's comments aside, the head coach for the Oshawa Generals. But really, in the one viewing I had of Sault Ste. Marie in a game where they were out without 5 of their top 12 players, manhandled the London Knights. Yes, it was a 3-3 for London, But in that game, there's a couple of AHL teams that might have had difficulty staying with the Sioux Greyhounds. They've played as expected to form, getting decent goaltending. They always have the puck. They move the puck extremely well. They play an entertaining brand of hockey that if they get a chance and they come south and you're in the Toronto area, go watch this hockey club. And if you live in the north, get up to Sault Ste. Marie, get up to the SR Center. It's a wonderful place to watch a game. It's well lit. The Sioux Greyhounds got those classic uniforms. Sheldon Keefe has really, really done a good job. And you know what, Jeff? I ran into Bob Nicholson last night in between periods of our Edmonton-Brandon game, and he had some very good things to say about Sheldon Keefe. He felt that when he was with Hockey Canada, they went out on a limb and brought him into their program, and obviously now he's been cemented as part of that program here moving forward as a part of the under-18 coaching staff. So I can't say enough good things about Sheldon Keefe, and oddly enough, all the goofy experiences he went through as a kid and as a player, somehow he's turned it around, and those experiences have made him a better person. And surely they've made him a better coach.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that he always said that he regretted from his Barry Colts run when they were one of the top teams, won the J. Ross Robertson Cup, bowed out in the MasterCard Memorial Cup tournament. One of the things he always regretted was not shaking Dave Branch's hand. I wouldn't be surprised if this year in Quebec City, he gets that opportunity to shake David Branch's hand, depending on, you know, what happens with the Greyhounds and the teams from the other two leagues. As we move along, have a look at what's happening to the Erie Otters. Yes, they are up 3-1 against the Sarnia Sting, but it has been a nail-biter. Trevor Letowski's squad has given the Erie Otters fits, and it's not just Connor McDavid. It's Alex DeBrincat. It's Ryan Strome. It's everybody all the way down the list. Letowski's squad, I think, even though they're down a couple of games here to Erie, and this might be it, next game might be over, and Sarnia, you know, marches into that good night. I've been really impressed at what Sarnia has been able to do to one of the top teams in the CHL. How do you read this series right now, Sam? Is Erie lucky to be up 3-1 in this one?
Oh, I think so. And when I look at Sarnia, I mean, watching Trevor Letowski's team earlier this year, really pay attention to detail, a tight-knit group, a group that's played well enough, obviously, to get into the playoffs. But they're doing things right now that are unbelievable. Jordan Kyrou is going to be a season star in the making. Yep. You know, you talk about Krestelev and Zaka, but Jordan Kyrou, you know, and I've been tooting his horn here for a little while. Josh Chapman has been driving McDavid absolutely nuts. Taylor Dupuis has been really good in goal. And they're doing it without Jacob Chychrun. That's the really impressive part. Unfortunately for the young man, has not had a really healthy season. But when he's played, he's been unbelievable. Unfortunately, he's been unable to participate in this series here for the Sarnia Sting, and there's no question he'd be a difference maker. But the key point, Jeff, you know this as well as I do, it's goaltending in Erie. That's been the question mark all season long.
Devin Williams.
An 867 save percentage is not going to make the cut. It's not going to make the cut. I'm sorry. You might get by, and your big guys might carry you through round one, but as the brackets start to thin out, an 867 percentage save percentage is not going to make the cut. And you know, when you're looking at leaning on 17-year-olds Dylan Strome and Connor McDavid to have to put up 3 and 4 points a night to make up for your deficiencies in goal, at some point that's going to come back and bite you, and it might be as early as the second round unless Devin Williams can get things figured out in goal.
Quick thought on the London Knights and the Kitchener Rangers series. Kitchener down 3-0 to the London Knights, and last night was just an old school beating. And it was one of those games where, you know, Kitchener had the lead, but at the end, like, if you walked away when Kitchener had the lead and you came back at the end of the night, you'd say to yourself, what just happened? Well, here's what happened. Mitch Marner put up 6 points and the London Knights beat the Kitchener Rangers in a playoff game 10-6. What London is doing to Kitchener, Sam, your thoughts?
You know, this is one of the series that I picked to be an upset. I thought Kitchener had a real legit chance here. I mean, everyone's talking about this being a down year for the London Knights once again, but their top three guys are undeniable. And Mitch Marner, you don't think he's ticked off about losing the scoring title on the final day of the season? He's starting to prove to scouts now that in difficult situations, he can rise to the occasion. The goaltending in terms of Jake Patterson has not been up to snuff. He's a guy who I thought would go in and really steal the series for Kitchener. Here's the one thing, though, Jeff. That series starts in London. It's a tough place to play. And the thing is, you go into London, you might give up a half a goal playing in the Budweiser Gardens. It's packed out, and you know they got the green thing going on and whatever else. But I think you give up another half a goal to the aura that is the London Knights. It's like walking into Yankee Stadium and being down 1-0 before the game starts. It's really like that. Because they have the aura, they got the hunters behind the bench, they got the banners up in the rafters, they get all the success, 3 straight years to the MasterCard Memorial Cup. That's what you're fighting when you play in London to open a series. And so London got off to a right foot by winning those two games. You know, a 4-2 lead late in the second period for Kitchener, you think that thing's wrapped up. But the big guys come back to shine. Marner with the huge night, as you talked about. And that's a difficult task now. I'm not so sure that the Rangers are going to be able to at least win one game in this series.
We had the Oshawa Generals on Friday Night Hockey. We had the Oshawa Generals on the CHL on Sportsnet on Sunday night as well. But the Peterborough Petes come back last night. They win 3-1 to cut that series in half. Oshawa now up 2-1 on the Peterborough Petes. How do you read this series right now? Peterborough, I think, are really raising some eyebrows. They're hanging in tough against, you know, one of the top teams from wire to wire in the CHL.
Had a real good chance to win game number two that we did, Jeff. You know, it was a 2-1
Absolutely.
Game there. Matthew
yep.
Mancina, to me, is he's unbelievable. He is about as calm a guy as I've seen in goal. And good on Mike Kelly and Guelph for listening to Matthew Mancina and wanting out of Guelph so we could go and get playing time. Couldn't have been a better fit in Peterborough. That's really, you know, kind of struggled in that department over the last couple of years. Yes, D'Agostini was a good goaltender, but really to find that guy that could carry a franchise, Mancina might very well be that guy. Big key in that series, especially in game three, was getting Cameron Lizotte back defensively. He missed the first two games. With his size, his physical style of play, he's able to handle when he's on the ice these bigger Oshawa Generals. This guy's tougher than Ride.
He's tough.
You
that
know?
Kid is.
So
ask anyone around the OHL.
Oh, yeah.
He is one of the toughest raw bone players.
Yeah. And Jeff, I'm going to ask you this question, that when you look at where he's ranked in NHL Central Scouting and where you think he's going to go, to me, those are polar opposites right now. I think this guy gets into the third, maybe the third and likely the fourth round, but no later than that.
If you want your defenseman with snarl, if you want someone that can shovel the snow in front of the net, who can move bodies, who isn't shy about dropping the gloves, who will make everybody on the ice on his team bigger when he's on there, Lizotte is your guy. I was talking to one scout on the weekend. I said, what kind of chance does Peterborough have against the Oshawa Jazz? And he said, they need to get Lizotte back in the lineup ASAP. I know they're going to make a lot about Machine and they're going to make a lot about Garland, but I'm telling you, you need big physical players. If you're going to go against Michael McCarron, 6 foot whatever, and big Hunter Smith as well, who's also 6 foot whatever, you need a raw bone, snarly defenseman like Cameron Lizotte. Hands down, Sammy.
Yeah, he's been, you know, a couple of assists last night. And with Mancina in goal, you have a chance. And that's all Peterborough asked. To be honest with you, Jeff, in game one Friday, in which they lost 7-2, I wouldn't have pinned any of that on Mancina. I thought he played fairly well in that game. But he was pelted, didn't have a lot of support, was really good in game two, and obviously, you know, good with 40 some saves in the game three victory for Peterborough. So I don't think they can win the series, but you know, extending it may be something that comes back to hurt Oshawa later on.
Quick thought on the Homer series, as we'll call it. Ottawa 67's up 2-1 over the Niagara Ice Dogs. This one's been a wild one. Goaltending changes, high scores in every game. This one's been, we talked about old school hockey in the Western Hockey League. If you like a lot of goals and craziness, slash, you know, the occasional dirty play, the dirty hit, the odd scrap thrown in for a little bit of spice, Ottawa and Niagara, has just what you order. This one's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, the goal scoring has been a little more than I expected, especially with Niagara. Yes, they do give up chances, but I thought Moran and Hope would be ready to take on this task, especially with the way they played down the stretch. But giving a bait on the final day to Erie might have set the tone for the two goaltenders going in. Looks like Moran maybe has taken over the number one job now. We'll see if he can hang on to that. But when you look at the home and road records for these two teams in the regular season, it should be absolutely no surprise as to the way this series has gone to this point.
Sammy, time now to have a look at the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. No surprise exactly, Rimouski up on Victo 3-0. But then the surprises really do start to fall. Gatineau up on the Armada 2-1. Cape Breton Screamy Eagles. Maybe we should start there, leading their series against the host of the MasterCard Memorial Cup this year, the Quebec Ramparts, 2-1, and it seems as if goalie follies seem to be running rampant with the Quebec squad. How do you look at Cape Breton and Quebec right now?
Well, here's the thing, Jeff. Going into this, Cape Breton was a lower-ranked team that you thought could do some damage. A lot of talent there. They made some changes throughout the course of the year. Clark Bishop was hurt for a good portion of the season, and so you had to wonder that if they didn't have more to give or they weren't a better team than what they were originally ranked. So let's put that aside for a second. Now let's look at the Quebec Ramparts, and I don't think there's any question that the acquisition of Zach Fucale they thought would shore up their goaltending position. Now, I had heard some stuff about Fucale going way back when to November about, you know, dealing with an upper body issue and that sort of thing. That never really came to the fore. He won a gold medal with Canada. You know, he's traded and he goes into Quebec. And I think they feel that he's going to be the guy that carries the mail. But when you look at Calen Booth and the year he's had as a draft eligible guy, he too was pretty good. The thing is, when Fucale went to Quebec, he never lit up the world. He never played to the standard that they expected of him. Yeah. And so Philippe Boucher, I think, in order to send a message, said, we're going to start Booth. They lose 3-1. You think they're going to come back with Fucale. Booth comes back and gets a shutout to win game 2. And then he gets into some difficulties in game 3. And that's where Fucale makes his debut in the series, stops 15-17, although they still lose to Cape Breton and now find themselves down in that series. The thing I'll say about Quebec is this. I think they have a really good top 9 group of forwards, but I think there's some real deficiencies in the back end. And I think there's a significant drop-off after, let's say, their top 3 defensemen. And so when you look at supporting a goaltender who's either draft eligible or a guy who really, you know, hasn't had a great season when it comes to regular season play, it's a challenge because you really have 3 guys that you can really lean on to help support them. So that means your forwards have to be more responsible. When I look at guys like Adam Ernie and Anthony Duclair, do I consider those guys defensive forwards? Not necessarily. Vladimir Katchev, same sort of thing.
Nope.
So now you're looking at all these gaps in Quebec's defense, Jeff, and I think you'd have to agree with me. This is going to be a pretty tough task coming in. I don't know where this series goes exactly, but I think Quebec is going to have to play its best hockey in order to get in through the front door.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging, and you're right about the back end. I was perhaps more surprised than you were that they didn't start Zach Fucale in game 1. I know Calen Booth had been the better goaltender, and that was the right hockey play. I just do wonder, by starting Calen Booth over Zach Fucale, knowing that you're going to need both goaltenders if you're going to have some kind of run, if you're going to try to go, as you point out, through the front door, not the back door to the MasterCard Memorial Cup, don't you just risk losing Fucale early by playing Calen Booth in that game 1? I mean, here's a guy, he's won the MasterCard Memorial Cup with Halifax. He's won World Junior Gold with Team Canada this year at the Air Canada at the Air Canada Center. Shouldn't the right call have been you go with Zach Fucale first and then you go back to Calen Booth? That's kind of how I would have looked at it.
And I see where you're coming from. But there was no history with him playing with the Ramparts that would say that should be the case. And here's the thing. Do you respect the guy's, you know, past based on, you know, what he's done and the things that you mentioned? Yeah, I guess to some degree. But if you're the Quebec Ramparts, aren't you living in the here and now? And what evidence did you have from the regular season that suggests he should have been the guy going in? So if you're Philippe Boucher, here's the way I see it. And I'm not saying this is exactly what he's done. Here's the way I see it. He looks and says, I want to send a message early on in this series that the way Fucale played is not up to the standard we expect. I'm going to start Calen Booth. I'm going to run with him until absolutely necessary, which was in game 3. And then maybe Fucale will have, you know, picked up on the message I'm trying to send him. But the other thing in Philippe Boucher's, in the back of his mind, and he'd never tell you this because every team wants to go through the front door, but he does have a backup plan. And the backup plan is this, that if you lose Fucale now and you end up bowing out early in the playoffs, you know you have the wild card to come back with him in the middle of May and start him as your number one guy on the 21st, 22nd of May or whatever the first game of the Cup is. And so I think that's kind of the behind-closed-doors thinking that the Quebec Ramparts are going through right now. But it's not just him. it's not just him, Jeff. I mean, Anthony Duclair, a lot like Leon Draisaitl, has been underwhelming since coming back from the National Hockey League. Adam Ernie is a wild card at times. Kachev, when he's interested, is a great player, but he's not always interested. So you have your deficiencies up there, and there's no question that, you know, once you get past their third defenseman, there are some challenges for, you know, there are some challenges at that point for the Quebec Remparts.
You know, and I know we're only three games into the series, but every now and then we do need a reminder never to count out a Benoit Grue coach team in the playoffs, specifically in the opening round where Gatineau is up 2-1 over Blainville, Boisbriand, and the Armada, Joel Bouchard's squad. Armada's a fun team to watch. We had them on Friday Night Hockey. We had them on the CHL on Sportsnet not too long ago. They are a fun squad to watch, specifically that Friday game we had them on. But, man, are we seeing a case of Benoit Grue flexing his coaching muscles and showing what good coaching and solid discipline can get you in the playoffs?
You know, it's funny. You know, they haven't scored a power play goal in the series, which is really odd for a team that's up 2-1 in the series. But they're a bigger team than what Blainville Boisbriand is, and that was the concern for me about Joel Bouchard's team, that going into the playoffs, were they going to be playoff-tested? And their recent history, because their teams have been made up quite similarly over the last couple of years, a smaller, faster, skilled type of team, yet they've still been able to get by and play in, you know, in the semifinals, I believe, in each of the last 3 years. But for whatever reason, some of the NHL guys that I talked to looked at Gatineau and said Gatineau's playing the best hockey of its season right now. And it took them a while, but if you look down the stretch, they were really good, Jeff. They got their goaltender Brassard back, who was hurt for a good chunk of that. And now they're starting to play like the team that I thought should have been a middle-of-the-pack team at the start of the year. You know, Carrier's been really good on the back end. He's probably a second-rounder. Trennan, a draft-eligible guy. I know a lot of scouts that have specifically gone into Gatineau to watch this guy. You know, there is some talent on this team. But, you know, it starts in goal. Brassard's been really, really good. You know, he's got a save percentage up over 920, I believe, in the series so far. Marcotte has got experience with Valdor playing in the cup last year. You know, Zikov has played in a cup before, in a couple of finals with Bécomo. So there are a lot of elements to this Gatineau team that if all the guys are pulling on the rope the same way, it's a team that can have success. So am I surprised by it? To be honest with you, I picked the first round upset for Gatineau over the Blainville, Boisbriand, Armada. I just thought they were, you know, a bigger, stronger team, and getting their goaltender back was huge to give the team confidence to allow it to play the way that I think Benoit Grue has expected it to play.
As we wrap up the segment, we'll give way to Kelly McCrimmon here in a couple of seconds, owner, general manager, and head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings. We have Game 5 tonight on Sportsnet between the Wheaties and the Edmonton Oil Kings. Is there a shocker? I mean, perhaps the Cape Breton squad up 2-1 on Quebec is the big shock, but is there another series out there, performance, that's really shocking? Sam Cosentino, maybe it's Bécomo up on St. John, 3-0. They're looking to close out. Is there something there that really grabs your attention right now?
You called it, Jeff, because Bécomo was a team, for me, that coming down the stretch wasn't particularly good either. But you're looking at a lot of guys that have had success playing in the league final the last couple of years. You're looking at a goaltender in Cadorette who's been just dynamite all season long. He's continued that fine play into the playoff series, just giving up 7 goals in the first 3 games of this series. And they're getting their top guys to play well. I mean, Milosh, a draft-eligible defenseman, expected to be a first, maybe early second-round pick, has got 4 points in the series. And they're getting contributions up and down the lineup, and that's the thing for Bécomo. And you have to give Marco Pietrangelo a lot of credit, because following Éric Veilleux and all the success he's had as a head coach, winning with Shawinigan in 2012, you know, coming into that situation, especially late in the fray, he's done a marvelous job with this team now, and they're on the brink of eliminating a St. John team that I thought was really, really poised to do some damage. St. John lost 8 out of 11 coming down the stretch. Auger hasn't quite been the same guy for whatever reason, and some of their younger draft-eligible players are maybe feeling the heat of a team that had some pretty good expectations based on the first half of their regular season.
Yeah, first half, they were a top 10 team weekly in the CHL rankings. All right, so on that, enjoy your action tonight in both the Western Hockey League, the OHL, and also the QMJHL. We'll take a quick pause here on the podcast and come back with Kelly McCrimmon, owner, GM, and head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Hi, I'm Brian Shen from Philadelphia Flyers. I play for the Brandon Wheat Kings in the Western Hockey League.
Sam, pleased to be joined by someone we've wanted to have on the podcast here now for a while. He is the general manager and also the head coach of the Brandon Wheat Kings, looking to close out tonight against the Edmonton Oil Kings, up 3-1 in that series. Kelly, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure is all ours. Curious about your message to your team going into this series with Edmonton. And, you know, no Reinhardt, no Samuelson, no Lazar, no Mraz, but still some leftover talent from last year's Memorial Cup champions. What was your message playing against the Oil Kings in this opening round to your team?
Well, Edmonton have a real good team identity, and, you know, they've lost some of those top guys from, you know, the past few years that they've had. And yet, I think 14 or 15 players returned that were part of their championship team a year ago. Very good defensively, very hardworking, very good team game. You know, we talked a lot before the series about, you know, being ready to play in 3-2 hockey games, which ironically is the exact score the last two have been. But you know, that kind of a mindset where it was going to be a little bit different game maybe than what we're used to playing, but that we had to be comfortable doing that.
Kelly, when I look at Jordan Paperny, is he playing the best hockey of his season right now? I think he's been really, really good. Rebound control, tracking pucks. He's been bothered like crazy by Brandon Paddock in front of the net. Is he playing the best hockey of his season right now?
Well, I don't think so. I think Jordan's you know, just on a progression that you know, good young goaltenders go on. Tristan Jarry would, you know, probably have had a similar path. He's a year older than Jordan, but really, you know, Jordan took over as the number one goalie on our team last year. Was our best player in playoffs. Had a tremendous series against Edmonton, the series where they beat us out in five games. And you know, this season, you know, he's played really well all year. He led the league in wins. He had 44 wins, which was the most for a weekend goaltender since Glenn Hanlon. He's the second team all-star at his position behind Tristan Jarry. So this is, I think, you know, a point in time that he's ready for, prepared for, and, you know, really, I think, you know, rising to the occasion now that it's in front of him.
Kelly, we talked yesterday plenty on the broadcast, both Sam and RJ and our crew in studio as well, about Ivan Provorov, highly ranked prospect for this year's NHL draft. At what point did you look at Provorov and say to yourself, we really have something special in this young Russian defenseman?
Right away. You know, by the time we were through, you know, a month of our season, you know, it was pretty clear that he was an elite-level player. He made the transition, you know, very well to being a, you know, a guy that was playing every situation for our team almost from day one. And I think as time went on, just his you know, consistency, continued improvement, and you know, his attention to detail in all three zones, you know, really, I think, established him. So as you know, more and more people have come to appreciate how good a player, you know, this is something that we were able to see, you know, right away just by being around him each day.
You know, Kelly, I know it's tough to talk about individual players, and that's kind of the path we've gone down so far, but the evidence to me is clearly in the pudding. When you have a guy like Nolan Patrick, he scores the game winner last night. He's on in all the important situations, taking all of your big draws. He's the lone forward in a 5-on-3. I mean, the future for this guy has got to be unbelievably bright, considering someone like yourself who's been around the block a few times, putting him out in all those key situations. Can you speak to Nolan Patrick and the rookie year he's had?
Well, he's exceptional talent, and you know, he missed 17 games. I believe he played 55 of our 72 games. He had 30 goals, you know, only the third 16-year-old in 20 years to be able to do that, and as I said, missing 17 games in the process. But you know, I mentioned to you yesterday, Sam, that there's so much more to his game than offense. He's got size, he's got reach. He's you know, very good defensive player. He takes a lot of pride in being a 200-foot player. He kills penalties. He plays 4-on-4 situations. So you know, some of these things you're mentioning, not having seen us play a whole bunch, you're surprised that he's in those situations. Certainly, the players on our team don't bat an eye. That's he's earned that and proven to be the right guy for a lot of those opportunities that he gets.
Who's been the main, Kelly, who's been the main spark plug for your team in the few viewings that I've had of the Wee Kings this year? It seems more so than not that when something happens, generally a player like Jace Haraluk is right in the middle of it. But maybe I'm feeding you the answer here, but who's the spark plug on your team?
Well, as you started to ask the question, I was rolling some names through my mind as what my answer was going to be. And Jace Haraluk, for me, he's the energy for our club. And I go back to our game two in this series, which came the night after losing the opener 4-1. And I thought he was absolutely tremendous in that game. And then with that, a lot of guys come along and bring that same type of energy to the game. And again, last night I thought he was really good in our game, so he'd be a guy that comes to mind. And yet I think one of the aspects of our team that's served us well all year is there's a lot of different guys that that probably can be that guy to step up in certain situations. Right now Rihard Bukarts, John Quenville are playing very well for our team. Those are two guys that I think have really had good series so far. So on any given night, I think there's a lot of guys that can do that. But Jace is a guy that for me, his work ethic and the energy he brings is a little bit along the lines of what Matt Calvert was when he played in our organization for the 3 years that he was with us.
Kelly, I'm fascinated to get your take on the new playoff format being utilized here by the Western Hockey League. And being in Brandon, you're in that unique situation as the furthest most team to the east. You draw Edmonton, and there's 1,150 kilometers between the two cities. How did this come about from a league perspective, and are you a proponent of it to this point in the early stages of it?
Well, a lot of these decisions, need to have some time before you have a real good feel. I don't think you can look at one playoff season and draw, any firm conclusions. I think the discussion was prompted when the NHL changed their format. I think that we, look at a lot of the, rules they use, style of play, a lot of the things that they do sometimes are things that we can apply at our level. So I think the interest level in the NHL playoffs last year and those races for wild card spots, got the conversation going. I think fans can follow the brackets. Obviously, we're just in the middle of March Madness with college basketball, which puts that bracket format in front of all of us. So I think some of those things led to deeper discussion, and I guess that the thing that I think is really good for our league is that it guarantees the 2-3 matchups in each division. So when you look at junior hockey, obviously we're a bus league. If you can have, at least half of your first-round playoffs are going to involve teams from the same division, I think it's less wear and tear on players. I think it's much better for building rivalries, not only as the playoffs are unfolding, but in my experience, the year after you play a team in the playoffs is where a rivalry really, carries over. So those are positive. And then in our own situation, just the way that the standings went, we have pretty much known for a month that we were either going to play Edmonton, which is 12 hours away, or Kootenay, which is 14 hours away. So it's not perfect for the Brandon Wheat Kings this time around, but I think from a league standpoint that it's going to be a good thing.
You're curious about the business of it as well. We talk about you being the coach and the general manager. You're also the owner of the Brandon Wheat Kings. Give us a sense from an ownership point of view of the business of junior hockey in Brandon, how the franchise is doing, and what sort of unique challenges your market represents or presents to you, Kelly.
Well, we're a mid-sized market, Jeff, and we've been really fortunate over a lot of years to have good teams. We haven't had a lot of dips in the cycle in terms of having competitive teams that are contenders to win. So I think that's been real important for us. In terms of challenges, we're on the eastern edge of the league, so our travel is you know, harder on our players and more expensive in terms of you know, just the costs that go along with it. But you know, the weekends for me have always been about the people in the organization. We've been extremely fortunate to have you know, fantastic people, whether that's in our scouting department, whether that's you know, business operations, you know, the consistency we've had with the coaches, all of those things, I think have really, you know, kind of, that's sort of what our culture is. And that's, I think, important in terms of it working for us and Brandon.
Kelly, I want to bring the focus back to tonight's game. It's game five here and an opportunity to wrap things up for your hockey club against Edmonton. What are the challenges going into this game, knowing that, you know, should things go sideways, you get back home, you know, 5 days between games. What's going to be your message to your guys tonight to really stay in the moment, stay focused, and try and, you know, get this thing wrapped up here tonight?
Well, I think we have to, you know, be, you know, mindful and respectful of how much this game is going to matter to Edmonton, and recognize the urgency that they're going to bring to the game. They're defending champions. And, you know, again, some of the intangibles that go with that, you know, make a team like that pretty hard to knock out. So if we're trying to end Edmonton's season tonight, we're going to have to, you know, I think build on some of the things that we did in game four. We thought we were better in game four than we were in game three. And, you know, that's what we're going to have to do here again tonight.
And last one for me, Kelly, and we thank you for your time. Is there a different message to the team when it's, say, a potential handshake game, or is this just another game, one of 16, you have to win to get to the MasterCard Memorial Cup?
Well, I think elimination games, you know, just from my experience, you know, the sooner you can end the series, the better it is in terms of rest, preparation, all of those things, and obviously ending the series and eliminating the opponent, I think, is obviously the message. But you know, I think as you go, you know, it's interesting at playoffs. The biggest game is always the next one, and you know, just in our series, you know, they won in our building to get the lead in the series. When you look at the fact that we were coming back to Edmonton for three games based on the 2-3-2 format, you know, that put a lot of pressure on our team in game two. If you're not successful in game two, now you're down 2-0 in the series coming on the road for three. So, you know, that was really, you know, kind of the importance behind game two, was to respond. You know, game three is to get, you know, get the edge in the series, and we were able to do that. Game four is either, you know, you're going to turn it into a best of three, or you're going to take take that game and put your opponent on the edge or on the brink. And, you know, fortunately, we've been able to do that. So tonight's focus is all about, you know, trying to finish our series. And you know, the flip side of that for the Oil Kings is they're going to, you know, play their best game. That's what we have to be ready for.
And we can't wait to present it on Sportsnet. Kelly, thanks so much for dropping by today. Best of luck this evening.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff, and thanks again for having me.
Kelly.
You know, Sam, it's got to be a real trip. And, you know, you mentioned Kelly McCrimmon's been sort of, you know, out the door and around the block. He's done so much in the world of hockey. It's a hockey family, of course, that he comes from. But it does have to be somewhat of a thrill when you see a former teammate's son on your bench. Kelly, of course, played with Steve Patrick, who's the father of Nolan Patrick, who, as we were just talking about, takes all those key draws, 30 goals as a 16-year-old. And as you pointed out on the podcast last week, and we've talked about on the broadcast a couple of times, is probably right now considered the number one prospect for the 2017 draft. But it's got to be good for Kelly. Here's a former teammate's son that he now gets to coach, Sam.
Yeah, that's got to be a lot of fun. And it's got to probably make you feel a little bit older. There's no question about that. But you know, what's cool is, Steve, you go back to his days, a first-round pick of Buffalo, 20th overall in the 1980 National Hockey League draft, and to think that his son is going to outdo him, there's no question about that. He'll go long before 20. I still think he'll be the first guy taken in 2017. But you're right, mm-hmm. It's got to be kind of a thrill just to see the generational change and see where the game has come from when, you know, he obviously played with Steve to the point now where he's getting to coach Nolan. So it's a pretty cool thing for sure. But I tell you what, Jeff, I mean, I know you guys talked a little bit about it. I you know, brought it up in the first period because I thought it was a very important and a special player that we're looking at. And, you know, everyone's talking about Connor McDavid right now, and I'm not saying this in the same vein that he is Connor McDavid, but this is a guy that by the time 2017 rolls around, he's going to be part of the conversation about generational players because that's how good he is. I mean, to do things at 16 years old, point per game, 30 goals, you know, 5-on-3s, important faceoffs, and you're talking about a team that's got 7 or 8 NHL drafted players. This is not a chopped liver team. And he's the guy who's getting really all the top minutes. So fascinating for me to watch him. It's going to be great to watch this guy progress right up until June of 2017.
Yeah, he's a fun talent to watch. We sort of positioned, we had game 4 last night, of course, Sam, and then tonight is game 5. Could be closeout tonight for the Brandon Wheat Kings and they move on. We sort of positioned this as the changing of the guard, where the Edmonton Oil Kings had their quote-unquote dynasty run in the MasterCard Memorial Cup 2 out of 3 years, won it last year in London at Budweiser Gardens. Do you kind of get that same feeling about Brandon in that they're a good team this year? They may win the whole thing this year. They're going to be perhaps even better next year. And then you mentioned they'll still have players you know, like Noel and Patrick still around. They're going to be good for 3, maybe 4 years at a stretch here, Sam.
Looks to me a little bit like the 09-10 Windsor Spitfires, because I thought the 09 team got to the MasterCard Memorial Cup maybe a year earlier than expected with guys like Ellison Hall, who are really young players. And I also look at the 2011-2012 St. John Seadocks, and the same thing. Remember Zach Phillips and Jonathan Huberdeau in their draft-eligible seasons, you know, winning
Simon
the Cup in Mississauga in 2011, Simon Desprez. I mean, a really good group of players there. And then going back to Shawinigan in 2012. So it really reminds me a lot of those teams. Now, they have a long way to go before they get to the MasterCard Memorial Cup this year, but finishing as the top team in the league, you know, winning the Eastern Conference, have now flexed their muscles with a 3-1 lead in this series. I think, Jeff, that, you know, you're looking at a team that you know, is going to kind of bypass that cycle in junior hockey and be good, as you say, for 3-4 years. And who knows what Kelly McCrimmon is going to be able to craft between now and then in terms of draft picks and developing further guys. But you got Cale Clegg, who hasn't really played enough to get a judgment on him. But when you watch him, you know that there's a massive talent there. Stelio Mathos is a guy first overall last year. So, you know, they just keep coming and coming. It's going to be kind of cool to watch and see if they can kind of equal what the 09-10 Spitfires did and what the 10-11 St. John Seadogs did.
Kind of an embarrassment of riches when you look down the line for the Brandon Wheat Kings. And Kelly McCrimmon's done a fantastic job of populating and turning over and repopulating this this team, which now does look poised for some long-term success. Tonight, Game 5, and we'll have it on Sportsnet. Who do you look for as far as big game players on both sides? You could look at a game like this and say, you know what, this is built for a guy like Tim McGauley, 105 points in the regular season, you know, number one marksman for the Brandon Wheat Kings. You look at Edmonton, if they're going to stave off elimination, you look to the netminder, Tristan Jarry. He's got to have a fantastic game. You look at you know, a player like Edgar Skulda, he needs to have a big game. Brett Pollock, the Dallas Stars second round pick, he needs to have a big game. When you look at these two teams, if Edmonton's going to extend or if Brandon's going to close, who needs to have big games tonight?
Well, I'm going to start with Edmonton. And for me, it's less about what an individual player does. And obviously there has to be some individual success that goes along with that. But the special teams have to be better. This is an Edmonton team that finished first overall in the penalty kill in the regular season in the WHL. They've given up 5 goals on 16 chances on the power play. That's not good enough, especially for a branded team that's had the second best power play in the league all season long. Then I look at the Edmonton power play. You know, particularly in the first period last night, they outshot Brandon 14-6. It was almost a flawless period other than not being able to capitalize either 5-on-5 or on the one power play they had. You go into the second period, a lengthy 5-on-3. They're unable to capitalize there. So for me, it's really less about the individual player. I mean, I think you can expect good things out of Jarry, but you really need your special teams to be much better than what they've been through the first 4 games of the series. When I flip the switch and I look at the Brandon Wheat Kings, the thing for me is really, they don't have to do anything different than what they've done from game two on. You know, an 8-1 win there, back-to-back 3-2 wins in a pretty tough building to play in Rexall. I thought from the second period on, they played really, really well. The 5-on-3 obviously was a huge kill there. Paperny's been excellent in goal, not giving up a ton of rebounds. But I look for, if I had to take an individual for Brandon, to me it would be John Quenneville, because I think he got criticized for his play throughout the regular season. Wasn't even a point per game guy. First round pick in New Jersey. He told us a couple of days ago on practice on Monday that he felt this was a clean slate and that he was ready to kind of take the next step and help lead this Brandon team. So I would look for him. But I do want to make this point, Jeff. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this game in particular, it's a massive, massive game for Brandon. I'm going to tell you why. Last night, Morgan Klimchuk is out of the lineup, and I didn't get any sense of indication, and just kind of being around and seeing him up in the press box, that he's going to play in game five. So the rest is going to be imperative to get him healthy, because if this Brandon team wants to go deep into the spring, Morgan Klimchuk is going to have to be a part of it for his 200-foot play. That's the first thing. Second thing is, I watched Ryan Pilon yesterday limp around after the game. He pretty much only played in power play situations for Brandon in last night's game. He, too, is a key guy. Rest is going to be key for him. Jace Hauerluck takes that shot in the left elbow, a cannon of a shot from Cale Clegg. His minutes were limited from that point on. Tough guy, well-built. I'm sure he's in top physical shape, but surely the rest would be good for a guy like that as well. I look at Provorov, who missed time blocking a shot in the game against Kootenay, I believe in February, who missed a couple of games there. Rest is going to be absolutely imperative, more so for the Brandon Wheat Kings than maybe any other team except for Victoria, because of their travel, their rest time becomes limited. So winning this game tonight, game five, and wrapping the series up is going to be absolutely imperative for me, for Brandon, just for the long-term success and the prognostication that you'd have to think they'll win out in the Eastern Conference and play for an Ed Chinoth Cup.
10 o'clock Eastern, 8 Mountain. It is game five. The Brandon Wheat Kings look to close out against the defending MasterCard Memorial Cup champion Edmonton Oil Kings. With that, we'll wrap up the podcast. On behalf of Sam and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the remainder of our games before we join you once again here on Junior. Have a great week. We'll catch up in 7 days right here at sportsnet.ca, or if you downloaded us on iTunes. Thanks so much. Enjoy tonight's game.